Welcome, friends, it's the Movie Boom Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachie and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 158. My name is Zachie Hassan, and I'm here with Brian Hall.
Hey, what's up, Zachie?
Not much. You know, it's fall, and we're in the thick of fall movies. We're ensconced in Oscar bait.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about it, to be honest. I mean, this is when you look ahead and you're like, I want to see that. I want to see that. Ooh, I hadn't heard about that, but now I want to see it.
And I know that you've kind of been cycling through. You've been taking advantage of your movie service that you have that lets you watch a bunch of movies.
Yeah. We'll get into that. that angle. But for now, yeah, my list of things to talk about reads like that McDonald's menu song. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I saw Stars Born, Bad Times at El Royale, American Vandal Season 2, Dark First Man. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was like a record you would get in a newspaper, and you'd play it, and if the chorus got through the whole McDonald's menu, you'd win $1 million. So anyway, out of nostalgia, I downloaded it one time out of from Napster or something. So it just exists floating in my my iTunes.
Your iTunes library.
Yeah, so my friend Chad at one point, he was like, hey man, can I just like grab a bunch of music from your computer and just for my iPod for the gym? And I was like, yeah, sure. So anyway, he grabbed a bunch of stuff and included that McDonald's song. So every now and then I'll get a text from him where he's at the gym. He's like, damn it, Brian, that McDonald's song keeps coming up on my shuffle.
That's really funny. You need to explain what a record is, you know, practically to the youngsters yeah. who are listening. But anyway, what did you see? What did you see?
Well, I saw a movie you saw. I finally caught up to you. I saw A Star Is Born.
Ah, all right. I'm curious. I'm curious what you thought of this one.
Well, I thought you did a really great job of talking about that movie without really giving anything away, but giving me a clear indication of how you felt and why. Uh-huh. So I definitely took that in with me. And I have to say, armed with that, I think I liked the movie quite a bit more than you did.
Interesting.
I actually would go to say that I really liked it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it totally worked on me. And at the same time, I completely understand your reservations with it. And it's interesting because I've listened to a couple podcasts with people talking about it who liked it probably to the same degree I did while still citing the things that you did.
Hmm.
So it's just one of those things like you either kind of roll with it or you don't. And I think you felt like a few important moments felt rushed.
Yes.
Yes, and I would even say, you know, a larger moment or, you know, felt like, as I was watching it, I was like, I know what you're going for.
Hmm.
Like, I'm not so sure that I walked into it as elegantly as you thought I may have. However, I was so invested with the journey that I was like, okay. Like, I just rolled with everything as it unfolded. I think... part of it too, I mean, just like on a personal level, I think, you know, everyone's got their sort of like fantasy sort of whatever. And I think there's a little secret rock star fantasy alive inside of me. And so I found...
I thought you were going to be like, you're secretly hoping that Bradley Cooper will whisk you away.
Yeah.
I thought that's where you were headed. Okay.
No.
I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's just me. Never mind.
I wouldn't fight that. No. But I think I found the whole fantasy of a... so not rags to riches, but you know what I mean? Like obscure to superstar sort of ride, exhilarating and fun to sort of go along with. And coupling that with performances, I think we both felt were pretty great. I
mean, yes.
Lady Gaga is ridiculous. And, you know, Bradley Cooper, I thought, actually, oh, okay. I do remember you weren't so on board with his voice.
It's not so much that I wasn't on board. I got it. I just found it amusing that he was so doing Sam Elliott.
Yeah, and it didn't bother me, but I did notice. I think I saw a trailer again after I saw the movie, and I felt like it was toned down in the trailer, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting. Whatever that is,
I think part of it is because, again, just to be very clear, that was certainly not anything close to like a deal breaker. It's just amusing, partly because we know what Bradley Cooper sounds like.
Yes.
So
yes.
You know he's doing something, and that's just sort of. You know, I'm very immature, and I I laugh at his effort.
I don't think that's immature. I feel like, haven't we discussed this before where it's, we read this somewhere or heard this, or maybe it was your idea, but it was when you hear someone doing an accent and that's how you're introduced to them, you buy it. Sure. But when you already know how they sound and they do an accent, it's much harder to buy into. And I totally get that. I don't know. I was just dead.
Brian, here's the metaphor I'm going to make, and this is so obscure and ridiculous that I will forgive you for not understanding what I'm saying, or for that matter, anybody else. There was a movie back in 2001 called Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within.
Uh-huh.
All right. And it was a fully CG animated movie, and it was doing what at the time was, you know, it was attempting to do sort of photorealistic people.
Right.
And the whole movie just exists in the Uncanny Valley. But anyway, the main character in the film, who I don't remember anything about the movie because it was a piece of crap, but the main character is drawn to look like Ben Affleck. Affleck circa 01, right? I mean, it's unmistakable. It's Ben Affleck. And then he opens his mouth and he's voiced by Alec Baldwin.
Oh, interesting.
So you're like, why does Ben Affleck sound like Alec Baldwin? You know? And so to me, I'm like, why does Bradley Cooper sound like Sam Elliott?
I have not seen that movie, but I totally understand what you're saying.
Seek out clips on YouTube.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within. I'm sure you'll find something with you know, CG Affleck, whatever the character's name is. And that was the weird disconnect I had. And so really, it sounds like I'm making a mockery of the heart and sweat and blood and tears that Bradley Cooper put into this role. But that was my thing. I was like, that's so obviously a Sam Elliott impersonation. It's borderline comical, but you know.
Yeah, you know. That's I actually literally just wrote down a note to myself to look that up after the show because I'm dying to see it.
That's really funny. The other problem I had, Brian, and I'm very curious what you think. To me, the walk to get us to where the movie ends.
Yes,
I didn't buy it. I just could not believe that the character, the sequence of events that ends up where it does. I didn't believe that, how do I say this?
I know.
I didn't believe the sequence leading up to that. Let me put it that way.
That's what I was alluding to earlier also. And like, I feel like I generously filled in some of the smaller spaces that the movie, I wouldn't have minded if they had spent a little more time getting us there, but it didn't derail it for me.
Okay.
Yeah. I it's a movie I wouldn't even mind watching again and seeing.
The one thing I'll say, I think Bradley Cooper made a very solid directing debut. I don't think there's any question about that. I also really appreciated how he cast really unlikely people in the smaller roles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Andrew Dice Clay is like really good in this.
Yeah, and just his persona and physicality adds to a character that doesn't get a lot of backstory, but you don't need it because you feel it.
Yeah, and Dave Chappelle also was very good. And I mean, again, these aren't people. I mean, you know, Andrew Dice Clay. I'm over here now. You know, that's what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got that Dice Man persona, and he ditches all of that, and yet, kind of what you said, like he has such a specific kind of physicality that adds that adds an implied background to the character.
Exactly. Right.
You know.
It was. Oh, good.
No, just one. I think even you know Bradley Cooper having Lady Gaga in the role. I mean, I think that was a very smart choice, and I think she is terrific. You know.
Yeah. I mean that. The moment, it's in the trailer, but when she's sort of forced on stage to perform for the first time, it's a really an exhilarating build-up and then very satisfying, you know? Yeah. And so you're completely in her corner, and you, for someone who, I mean, like she plays places triple times the size of that, but you still somehow buy that this is a new thing for that person that she's taken in with. And if there was one thing I would say, that I do wish there had been a bit more of. I would have liked to have been a little bit more in her head as well.
Some of her rise. Yeah, I totally agree.
There's a moment where you definitely know how he feels about it, and she's not very clear how she feels about it. The movie isn't very clear.
I think that's my probably, like, if we were to pinpoint my specific problem with the film, it's that it feels very out of step with this current historical moment we're in, where it's essentially a woman's story told through the eyes of the man who resents her success, who discovered her and then resents her. And my thought is, like, we've done this story three times already one way. Why not mix things up in that direction? Because it's her fame filtered through Bradley Cooper's perspective of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, to me, that's my problem, is she displays, you know, sort of saint-like patience with him.
Yes. Yes.
Specific, you know, there's like the one thing that happens that's so... Here's the thing, okay? I want to talk about this.
And I was going to say, I almost wish we could do a spoiler episode on this.
You know what? Look, let's do a mini
revisit?
Spoiler thing right... No, let's do a mini spoiler thing right now, because I want to talk about this.
Hi, this is Brian from the future. In an effort to help those who would like to avoid spoilers for A Star Is Born, please feel free to skip ahead to around, the 18-minute and 50-second mark, which includes the ads at the beginning. Again, we're going to spoil A Star Is Born, so if you plan on seeing it, I'd highly recommend skipping ahead to the 18-minute and 50-second mark and revisiting this portion later.
Spoilers!
Okay. So, Lady Gaga wins her Grammy, or whatever, right? Bradley Cooper is drunk as a skunk. He gets up on stage with... He stumbles on stage with her and pisses himself.
Yes.
Which is obviously a horrible, awful thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, so now everyone's like, why is she staying with him, etc. He goes off to treatment. He comes back from treatment, and douchey publicist guy who I don't think... Are we on his side? He seems like kind of a douche.
Oh, I didn't like him, no.
So he's like, hey... Bradley Cooper, you pissed yourself and now you're ruining her career just because you're with her. And so Bradley Cooper is like, well, then obviously I need to hang myself.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? There's so many factors here, but I'm like, why make that douchebag the impetus for that? Why would Bradley Cooper think that's
Listen
such a
that
bizarre
guy.
Leap? Do you get what I'm saying?
I am totally with you, because I believe we could have gotten there. And like I said, I think I generously allowed the movie to... I generously went with the movie for that. But I thought just having that one conversation feel like the thing that would undo him, I feel like that could have been the start of the thread unraveling.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you, because this is sort of what the Kris Kristofferson version did a little bit, where he dies in a road accident.
Right.
So you have, like, the point is to end with them, with Bradley Cooper dead. Okay. Well, you have him die on his way to her.
Yes. And I thought that's what's going to happen. And I thought he was going to go back to the drugs.
Sure.
And that's what, a car accident.
Sure.
Which I may have been.
But even
more on
that
board
to me, because it robs the character of being able to claim some kind of a moral victory.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea here is like, oh, I'm killing myself because of her career. Well, that's effed up on so many levels, because I can't imagine that that's what she would have wanted.
Of course, right. I mean, the movie portrays it as, like, you see her. It does not do anything for her.
Yeah.
Positive
all. So this is my problem, is there's no moral, like, valediction at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And... That's what I'm saying. Like I'm on board with these characters. I'm enjoying seeing their relationship, and then they are torn apart because the script gods have already predetermined, well, this is what has to happen, so we have to somehow end up there.
Right.
The movie does too good a job of making us believe this romance and that these two people love each other.
Yeah, and that's something I liked about the movie too. Like, she never had any moment where she stopped loving him.
Yes.
And I really admired that. I mean, that felt like a real love story.
But it doesn't reward that. See, that's my point.
Right.
It doesn't reward her devotion to him.
Right.
So the my thing is, I walk out of the theater, I'm like, well, what is the message here? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, yeah, it feels like it could be that, you know, he is tortured enough. He had whatever upbringing he had, and his whole life led him to have these sensitive buttons, and those are some buttons that may never heal. And that's my interpretation.
I mean, he's a
slave
to his
addictions. I agree with you that I don't think the movie did a good wrap up to that being the
because,
case.
Because here's my sort of culminative thought, right? Is fame worth that, right? Because the thesis of the movie would be her fame is worth more than his life.
Right, to him.
Right, but by extension of through the film, because the movie never critiques that decision.
Yeah.
Right? The idea that, we go from his lowest ebb being he's up on stage and pisses himself, which is obviously awful, right? Mm-hmm. But it's as if the movie is like, loser, why don't you kill yourself? And he does.
Right.
And we're supposed to be like, oh, but what a romance for the ages at the end of that.
Right.
That's what's so weird. I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about it. I get the idea of a couple that we're invested in their romance and they're torn apart. You know, Titanic, etc., right?
Uh-huh.
This is like, yeah, but it happens for stupid reasons. And it happens not just in the sense that he kills himself. It happens in pursuit of something that's ultimately stupid. Like, if the movie ends at a place where it's like fame is stupid, empty bullshit, that's one thing. But when you think about it, I mean, look at the trajectory that it puts Allie on, right? As she starts out, she's like herself, and that's like, you know, like she's like normal and just like average looking. And then she's turning into this sort of manufactured thing, and the movie is never really critiquing that, right? Because it has Bradley Cooper criticizing her for turning into that. But we're clearly supposed to be against him doing that because he's doing it in a horrible, cruel way.
Yeah. That's what I wish. I wish we had gotten into her head about that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, why not do that? Because we've done this story enough times where now you could do something different if you want to.
Sure.
Right? I don't know. Anyway, I didn't mean to go down this rabbit hole, but I really wanted to talk about this with you.
Yeah, no, this is great. And it's funny because when you say like a romance for the ages, I guess I didn't even really think of it that way. And I just sort of looked at it as like, messy people, messy circumstances, messy ending, you know, just sort of like life.
I can appreciate that. And I think what I said to you last time is I didn't feel like the whole was greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
And I still feel, I think there's so much about this movie that's worth recommending, but it just didn't land for me the way it has for so many other people, which is, that's fine. They're not wrong for feeling that, but these are my critiques.
I love it. This is great. This rarely happens.
It's true.
This is kind of fun. I'm enjoying hearing.
Rarely are you wrong, Brian. And yet,
no, but it's nice to hear, like I said, I mean, my final takeaway is that I still really enjoyed it. But like hearing someone be able to articulate this so well, and I'm like, hey, you're not wrong. Like it's really, I don't know, it's kind of invigorating.
Cool. Well, tell me about Bad Times at the El Royale. I have not seen this one, but I want to. I'm very excited to see it.
Okay, so again, We won't get into spoilers with this. This is an interesting movie. This one. It's funny because it was sort of sold, and I think a lot of people were going to go into it feeling like it was some sort of Tarantino riff.
Like a Pulp Fiction wannabe?
Yeah, and it's not. It's actually more of a Coen Brothers riff.
Hmm.
And I listened to an interview with Drew Goddard, and he said that he screened Barton Fink for everybody.
He's the writer-director, by the way.
Yes, sorry. And I was like, that makes total sense. But it's one of those things where you go to this, you know, one lone, interesting location where there's a lot of mystery and all these different characters who seem to have double lives going on, but you're not quite sure what they are, thrown together, shake it up and see what happens, you know? And it's an interesting movie. I actually wish I had liked it more than I did. The setup, the first act is just fantastic. Like the characters are intriguing and you're very, very curious what's going on with them. And the camera work throughout the whole movie is fantastic. Like the camera moves and its focus and everything is completely intentional. And it only wants you to see and notice what it wants you to see and notice, which I just adore. It's also set in the 60s. So there's like great music, which is sometimes like a great cheat even, you know, to put you in a certain mood. And as these mysteries unfold, I would say I was with this movie even all the way up till about halfway through, maybe even two thirds. But then when the movie revealed itself to be what it was, I just didn't feel like it lived up to its fantastic first half.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing. And I was happy to see I wasn't alone in that as I was afterwards. I read a few people's thoughts on it. And I've read other people that loved it all the way through. And I get it. But yeah, it just... All the characters are very interesting. And then there's a character introduced toward the end that kind of takes over the movie. And I didn't feel like it was like some big answer to anything, or actually kind of similar to how you felt about Star is Born.
I was literally about to say, it sounds like your reaction to this is like my reaction to Star is Born.
Yeah. And this isn't a spoiler. I mean, there's just no huge twist and there's no clever intermingling between everything. It just sort of wraps itself up. And I think the movie makes you feel like it's heading towards something bigger and then it kind of doesn't. And then it ends, and, you know, I just listened to a podcast earlier today where people, that completely worked for them, and that's great. But, well, this is, I'm Zachy now. But, but no, yeah, I really left wanting to like it more. But it's, I think if you're intrigued by the trailer, knowing that it's maybe not going to be your next favorite movie, but, like, wanting to see something very different, I think it's nice enough to reward a filmmaker trying something.
There you go. So go see it because, oh, God bless you.
Well, I mean, I would save it for a rental, I guess is what I'm
saying.
But if you
want
to see something,
you're patting
really nice.
Drew Goddard on the head. Bless your sweet
little. Yeah, like he needs it. But I didn't know this, but he was like heavily involved with Lost.
That's right.
And it made complete sense afterwards, where there's this huge, you're gearing toward this mystery. There are all these people that you're not quite sure what you think of them. Then you learn about their past. Then you see them a different way. And then the ending is a little bit like, can't live up to what they set up.
Sure.
However, I mean, I really do mean this, and I'm not trying to like just be nice, but like, it was really cool to watch a story where I had no idea where it was going.
That's always refreshing.
It is. So, I mean, I can't say that I felt happy with the conclusion, but I was really invested as I was being pulled along through it.
Huh.
So just knowing that it's probably not going to blow your hair back toward the end, it's still cool seeing John Hamm.
Sounds like a Netflix movie to me.
Yeah, like a Netflix movie. And Bill Pullman's son is in this. And I have it in front of me, but I don't know what his name is. But he plays like the bellhop.
Lewis Pullman.
He is really great.
Really?
He might be, in my opinion, the best thing about the movie.
You know, when Lewis Pullman, when he got the gig and he finally moved out, you know what he said to his dad? Today, I celebrate my Independence Day. And Bill Pullman shed like a single tear. He didn't find it amusing at all.
Yeah. Well, I also have to call, as long as we're calling people, I need to call this person out. Cynthia Erivo. She plays like a 60s Motown singer, and she is fantastic. And Jeff Bridges. I mean, it's like goes without saying with Jeff Bridges, but even knowing exactly what he's going to bring to this, he's still riveting. So.
Jeff Bridges brings his Jeff Bridgesness.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like Jeff.
It's an intriguing movie, but not an ultimately super satisfying one.
I want now a Jeff Bridges Jeff Goldblum team up movie where they're just playing themselves.
I kind of want that too.
You know, I want them like solving crimes or something. I don't know. We'll figure that out. But the point is, they are playing themselves in something.
We give Hollywood way too many good ideas.
J squared. I don't know what we'd call it. Jeff squared.
Jeff and Jeff.
Jeff and Jeff.
The Jeffs. I don't know.
I need that to happen.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll talk about these really quick, but I also saw American Vandal Season 2.
Okay, so the first season was about the penis thing, right?
Yeah, someone spray-painted a bunch of penises on cars in a teacher's lot at a high school. And this one is very similar in that there's another very juvenile setup, which is basically someone poisons a cafeteria and everyone's just crapping themselves all over the school. And they call it the brownout.
The brownout.
It's oh my gosh, it's so great. And the guy who orchestrated it, they called the turd burglar.
Nice.
So again, another juvenile setup, but yet again, I mean, bravo. It's another fascinating character study. And, you know, they have a different lead this time. The last time, the guy who was the suspect was this sort of dim-witted, you know, I don't know what you'd even call him. But, like, you just fell in love with this guy, and he had this really specific personality. And they do it again. This lead has a very different personality, sort of like a guy who acts like he's smarter than everyone, and he's an expert on teas of the world and whatnot. But this character, I mean, he's so annoying. And then all of a sudden, you're like, man, I really care about this guy. And what I love about this show is it walks such a tightrope where the magic trick of this show is it's about the grossest, stupidest thing. And they could have their sort of mockumentary style interviewees smirk.
Sure.
Or like tell jokes, but they don't. They play it completely straight. And that's what makes it funny. Like, they trust themselves that this will be funny enough and that you will laugh enough, but that you will also be invested enough if they don't make it into a joke. You will care.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I mean, season one won a Peabody Award. So this season, again, by the end, I really cared about everybody involved, and I couldn't believe the characters that they had crafted and took me on. And such a, it's only, you know, 20-minute episodes, and there's six of them, I think, or eight. And by the end, I missed it. I missed it. So I highly recommend American Vandal season two and one if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I need to watch both of them.
Yeah, it's really cool too. I mean, this is like a show that could only exist on like a Netflix or something, right?
Sure.
I mean, and so it's really cool that we are. Yeah, I don't know how much stuff they're throwing out there because people will mention shows to me I've never even heard of, but I'm just glad there's a space like this where a show like this can exist.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I'll bring up my brother recommended to me the show called Dark, which is on Netflix. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
I would say the lazy description. And I'm saying this is my own description and it's lazy, I would say it's Stranger Things meets Twin Peaks meets Flight of the Navigator meets Germany.
Interesting.
So it's German and it's like I don't even really want to spoil what it's really about, but it is like a town and there's a mystery that edges on horror, but it never really goes full horror. It's a little more science fiction-y and I don't know, people trying to get to the bottom of it. And it's interesting because Stranger Things is very, now I'm realizing in comparison, very American in its execution and its, you know, sense of humor and sense of speed and, you know, what it knows, the boxes it needs to tick to satisfy everybody. And this show moves at a much slower tempo. And also the translation can make the dialogue seem a bit stilted.
Okay.
So I don't know whether or not to say it has good dialogue.
Interesting.
Because it's not like they're going to, you know, retranslate it into something that makes complete sense to us. But it took me a couple episodes to get into this. And the only reason I kept going was because my brother said that he thought I would like it. And I would say about episode four was when it hit for me. And it definitely was like, oh, that's why he recommended it. For nice. Me specifically. It definitely scratched a certain genre itch that I, Brian, have. And I only have two episodes left now, and I'll probably watch them after this because I'm very curious to see where it ends. So I would say, like, I don't know that it needs to go at the top of your list, but if any of those description shows sound like something that you like, it might be worth giving it a shot.
And that is Dark.
Dark.
That's the name of the show. It's not a descriptor of the show.
Yes.
Well, I guess it's a
descriptor. And it could be also a descriptor of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lastly, you and I both saw First Man.
Yes.
And, you know, we debated whether we want to hold this to the end and do like a spoiler wall thing, but, you know, I think we all know Neil Armstrong landed on the moon.
Zachy?
Sorry, folks. It's a thing that happened. Yeah. Now, you saw this a little while ago.
Yeah, I saw this maybe about 2 months ago.
Okay.
And it's been interesting because I had feelings and I sort of wondered, it's weird. Like when a movie comes out, you almost are immediately aware of the general consensus.
Sure.
And a lot of times you sort of join the general consensus, but sometimes you have different feelings. And I wondered, I actually was just kind of lukewarm on this movie.
Yeah.
And I've been sitting here for months wondering if I was wrong. So it's been kind of interesting seeing people come out and be somewhere close to how I felt about it.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that I think there's a lot to admire about this film, but mm-hmm. it stubbornly refuses to be, you know, a kind of a crowd pleasing type film.
It's funny. I like that you added stubbornly to it, because I sort of feel that too. And it's not Apollo 13. Let's put it that way, right?
And that's really the best comparison I can make. And I think I think that Damien Chazelle, who directed it, and obviously we know how talented he is, right? Whiplash mm-hmm. and La La Land. I think he very specifically wanted to make this not like Apollo 13.
Yes.
And that you see that impetus really drive so much of the creative choices in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And some of which I really admired. You know, I thought it was very clever. You know, like, for example, one thing... By the way, so the movie's about Neil Armstrong and the first moon landing, and what a momentous thing that was. Ryan Gosling plays, quiet, determined guy, which is, like, the role he's played in the last, like, 7 movies he's appeared in, right?
but to the, like, nth degree. I mean, this is a very internal character, and the movie doesn't even try to do anything about it.
Yeah,
right?
and he's
very internal.
And the thing is, you say, okay, well, is that who Neil Armstrong was? So is he just being true to the reality of the person he's playing?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which, if that's the case, then that's fine. I think the problem is that it leaves sort of a narrative void in the middle,
mm-hmm.
where what's propelling the story is sort of our knowledge of where things are going to go. Now, I think there's a fidelity to point of view in the film that I appreciated because it was something different. So we don't get, you know, the majestic shots of the rocket taking off and James Horner music playing or whatever. It's like the camera is inside the cockpit and we're looking out the window, which is exactly how Neil would have seen it.
Yeah. And very tight shots.
Very, very, right. Very claustrophobic. And again, I can appreciate the artistic desire to go in that direction.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually did admire that choice. And I don't want to interrupt your thought, but I did admire that.
Yeah. I can appreciate it because, again, this film exists just as much as a response to other movies that have done, covered similar terrain, right? Mm-hmm. That being said, it's I certainly wouldn't call it a bad movie, but it's not a movie that stays with you in a way you'd hope.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it almost feel like I'm saying the thing that the filmmakers would roll their eyes at. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a very rousing movie. What I like about it is I do like that they show what it takes to get there.
Yeah.
Like we see some failed missions and we see some of the tests that go into getting to this mission eventually. But there was still something that, as much as Neil, possibly his personality kept people at a distance, this movie sort of keeps you at a distance as well emotionally. Mm, and yeah. I just found myself intrigued by it because I did want to know, like, there's part of me that wanted to admire its integrity, I guess. Does
sure.
that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the movie was really wanting to have integrity in its execution and not be Apollo 13 and like a crowd pleaser, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Or a popcorn movie with some history in it.
Yeah.
And which, by the way, I like Apollo 13, as I say that.
Yeah, yeah, but we should clarify. I mean, Apollo 13 is a favorite for both you and I, so.
Yes. A very good, very good movie.
Excellent movie, yeah.
But yeah, there's just something that the movie, like, wouldn't let me in, and I was, like, halfway through, like, okay, fine, then I'll just watch it from over here. Kind of. That said, the moment when they do get to the moon is, if you're going to see this at all, see it now in a theater for sure. Like it literally took my breath away. I didn't even realize this. I learned this later, but I guess the movie was shot on 16mm.
Really?
And then the moon sequence was shot in IMAX.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't know that. And I totally felt it. I don't know. I did feel, I don't know if emotional is the right word, but it really did put me there. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that experience.
I agree. I think that, it's weird because again, this is not a movie I disliked. I really didn't. I appreciated a lot of the stuff that he did, and I appreciated how he was trying to mix up the genre, I guess we'd call it. Right. I think the big problem for me is Ryan Gosling's performance is so internal that he's just inscrutable for big chunks of it, you know. And here's the problem, right? We're several times throughout the film, you know, we see Neil Armstrong lose a friend or, you know, a colleague, right, because of the various accidents, and those are tragic events. And specifically, you know, Jason Clarke as Ed White. Jason Clarke is really good in this movie.
Yeah,
I really liked him. And you know, if you know the history, you know that Ed White died on a test pad. I mean, they allude to that, in fact, in the beginning of Apollo 13. So, you know, as soon as he's introduced, you're like, oh, man, the clock is ticking on this guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when he's like, oh, me and Gus, we're going to be doing this thing, you're like, oh, damn, here it comes, you know? And that moment, I think, has a kick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that moment works. But there's a scene earlier where another person has died, and it's like the funeral, and Corey Stoll, as Buzz Aldrin, is like, he says something kind of douchey, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Armstrong's like, hey, you know, don't talk like that, whatever. And this is like, and you know, this is their like first meeting, and they're like at odds with each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just because we're conditioned this way, but we're expecting that moment to kind of circle back around.
Yes. Yeah. Sure.
Do you see? Like, we're expecting. Okay, this is their. Not to minimize what real people went through, but this is like when Riggs and Murtaugh first meet. And
yeah.
We know by the end they're going to be like the team that gets on the moon. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But we never get there. Like, that never happens.
Yeah. You're saying exactly how I felt. So it's, in one way, I want to admire the movie for those choices. But on the other hand, maybe those choices are there for a reason sometimes,
yes,
you know?
Right. You get why it's trying to differentiate from the other movies. But it's like, this is a movie that's meant to stand the test of time and be about one of the greatest achievements in human history.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe lean into those choices.
Yeah, there's a moment, I don't think we're going to get into spoilers for this. I mean, I know you can't spoil it, but, you know, there's an impetus, I think, that the movie posits for why Neil is particularly keeps to himself and kind of quiet, maybe sullen.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was a lovely moment when he returns.
Yeah.
And he's talking to his wife. Basically, he's like in decontamination behind glass.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like a moment that would not have been in another movie.
Yes.
Like, you would have just had him hug his wife, and then he's in his backyard, and he sees the moon again and smiles and walks away, and, like, Spirit in the Sky starts playing and the credits roll, you know, like, something like that. But, like, it was such a quiet moment and a drawn-out, like, unexpectedly drawn-out moment, and also a catharsis moment for the two of them and their relationship. And
Claire Foy, like, as the wife, by the way.
Yes, yes. And I was like, okay, this is the moment, type of moment I've been longing for, but this is this movie's version of this moment, and I have to realize this myself, because the movie isn't going to sort of give it to me. I just have to realize, like, oh, this is where they're healing, and this is where, right? Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does, yeah.
So yeah, it's a hard movie to sort of explain.
It did underperform at the box office, worth mentioning, and I can't say I'm surprised by that.
Because of the marketing, or because reviews or something?
The
or what?
Marketing as well. I mean, I hate to say it, but I don't know that there is much of a market for a movie about Neil Armstrong, unfortunately.
Mm.
But I don't think the movie really gives you the stuff that you put in the ads and really make it sound like a crowd pleaser kind of film.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, the movie, well, the ads obviously have to try to make it look like that thing, but, and it's interesting too, coming from Damien Chazelle, who, you know, just previously did La La Land, which is just so different.
Yeah.
But also even Whiplash, as small, quote unquote, of a movie as that was, it still felt like it hit all those beats to be sort of a popular movie. I think a lot of people didn't see it maybe because of its distribution scope.
Sure.
But I think most people who watch that would probably get caught up in it and feel what it wants you to feel.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it was an interesting turn for him. I don't know.
I mean, Ryan Gosling is basically playing Kay from Blade Runner last year.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This kind of, like, emotionally cut off person who's trying to figure out what his role is in all of this. I mean, again, I think the other thing to think about is that Neil Armstrong himself was a very reclusive person. He didn't, I mean, you know, when you think about it, like, how many interviews did we ever see with Neil Armstrong during our lives?
I never even thought about it, but you're right. I mean, it's Buzz Aldrin we always hear from.
We always hear from Buzz Aldrin. Buzz Aldrin is the guy on Punky Brewster.
Yeah, right,
and talking
right.
to Optimus Prime in one of them Transformers movies, you know? Right? Neil That's Armstrong funny. Kept to himself. Like, I mean, I'm straining to think of any interview I ever saw with him. And when you think about it, this is the guy who did something that no human being in history did before him, and only a very small handful of people after. And he could have been on, you know, cereal boxes and t-shirts forever, and he just didn't.
Yeah. And I can understand that character too. You know what I mean? He just feels like a real life character. And I'm glad. I wouldn't want the movie to even change that. I mean, its approach could be different things, but I do appreciate them not sensationalizing a guy when he wasn't, you know, another way.
Yeah.
And Ryan Gosling, I mean, he's just proving himself to be someone you can depend on. I mean,
he's you can depend on him to do a good performance. You can't depend on him to open a movie.
Well, yeah, but I just as a fan, I mean, catching glimpses of like nice guys on cable every now and then. I mean, he's funny. He can also do sort of the brooding thing.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
Feel dangerous like he doesn't drive. And yeah. I think he makes interesting choices. So I'd say he's probably one of my favorites right now.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. With that,
man,
mind,
this is like really nice hearing this from you, by the way. I've had this inside me for a while wondering.
Yeah, well, we kind of landed on the same place, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
See that? Things still make sense, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very funny. Oh, and I should mention, actually, that I went to the Academy screening at Lucasfilm, and I took my kid with me. So that was super fun, just having that experience.
Yeah, what was that like? I mean, what building were you in, and what did you get to see?
So this is the theater at the Presidio, and this is the Lucasfilm facility. You've seen it. You visited the outside of it where there's the Yoda fountain.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into the building directly behind that, and there's a screening room there, and it's like an old-fashioned theater, not stadium seating, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my kid is like, what kind of theater is this? And I'm like, this is the kind of you know, this is what we had, and we liked it, you know?
Right.
And I will say he liked the movie.
Oh, good.
So he found it, you know, I mean, he likes the stuff. He likes the history of the space program and stuff. So he certainly was never bored.
Good.
That being said, I mean, he's my oldest, and he's different. I would imagine if I took my other one, he would have been bouncing off the walls pretty quickly.
Right. Like, so, when is Neil going to bite their heads off?
Yeah, right, you know? When is the space alien going to infest him? Yeah.
Yeah.
So lowered expectations, I think, would be helpful. Don't go in expecting either the right stuff or Apollo 13. That being said, Brian, I think this makes for a pretty great middle leg of a cool space race trilogy, if we think of the right stuff, First Man, and Apollo 13.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we're similar in that we like true stories. Like, we like biopics. So it's, yeah. I know this isn't, movies aren't always the most reliable source, but sometimes I don't know a lot about an event, and it's nice when a movie, you know, can kind of be your cliff notes.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
You know, and so it's nice to, I don't know, just dip into that world and learn a little bit more about something I didn't know a whole lot about. So it definitely does that.
Yeah. So real quick, before we take a break, I wanted to share a letter that we got. This is from Jeremy Lloyd, and he wrote us a very lengthy note, not only complimenting on the show, but also making a few recommendations, and I wanted to throw these out there, because these are movies I haven't seen yet, but I really want to. One of them is Chappaquiddick. Also starring Jason Clarke, and, you know, the story of Ted Kennedy and what happened there, and great cast, and so, that's like sitting in my queue, and I really want to watch it. But the other thing he recommended is the miniseries The Looming Tower on Hulu.
I don't know.
And this is about the lead up to 9/11, and it stars Jeff Daniel. And this is what Jeremy says: I was completely blown away by the story and performers in this one. Jeff Daniels delivers another memorable performance, and an actor by the name of Tahar Rahim gives a brilliant performance as one of the very few FBI agents at that time who could speak Arabic and came from a Muslim background. And you know, me, I always like hearing about characters like that.
Yeah.
So he has recommended it to us, and I want to throw it out to the listeners too. And then he ends his note by saying, first of all, keep up the good work. And then he says, still waiting on that Aliens commentary track, which we promised once upon a time. And you know what? Promises get broken. Deal with it. No, that's terrible. I want to do it. I really want to do it. I think, honestly, if we are going to do that, your friend and mine, Sean Coyle, should join us, and we should...
Before you even mention it, that was what was going through my head.
Yeah. So that is going to happen one day, and I guess that is subject to Sean's very busy availability. So let's see what we can, when we can do that. TBD. I'm not going to say when, but it will happen.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk some trailers and headlines. All right, we're back, and before we get to headlines, we got one trailer that I would love to hear your thoughts on. I don't even know. I think calling this a trailer, frankly, is exceedingly generous.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because this is basically just a clip from the old movie, I think. This is, of course, our first look at, or not look at, Aladdin. The live-action movie directed by Guy Ritchie, starring Will Smith, not as Aladdin, as Genie. Mm-hmm. Let's play some of that. I was about to say, like, do we want to play some of that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it supports something we're going to bring up in a minute, huh?
All right. Well, here we go. Here's some of that. All right, so this is the latest in Disney's line of just repurposed versions of their old stories.
Yes,
they've found a new vein to mine.
Yeah, and they seem, aside from their Marvel Star Wars output, it seems like their only interest.
Yeah, live action remakes of cartoons.
Yeah, so we're not getting. I mean. Only because I referenced it earlier, but you know, when we were growing up, we had these Disney live action movies like Flight of the Navigator and whatnot. Now it just seems like they're only interested in repurposing their existing stuff.
Just how can we leverage whatever IP we already have?
We already have, yeah. But I will admit that, you know, for a lot of people growing up with Disney cartoons or their animated movies, for me, I would say a lot of people, I think our age, for them, it was like The Little Mermaid. And that was what revitalized them and their whole animation wing or whatever. But for me, it was Aladdin.
Interesting.
Yeah, like I didn't see Little Mermaid till years later, but Aladdin was like the first. I was at like 12 or something maybe, and it was like, oh no, I'm 12. I don't go see Disney cartoons. You know, I was in that kind of phase. But then when Aladdin came out and had Robin Williams voicing the genie, and it looked really funny, and I mean that got me to the theater. And then after that, of course, I saw like Lion King and, you know, been seeing him pretty much ever since. But so I do have a morbid curiosity in this a little bit, but coupled with some cynicism. I don't think the trailer helped.
You're sure?
Because this one in particular, I mean, it literally looks like a fan made it.
Yes.
Where he just somehow made it look like a live action version literally aping shot for shot from the animated movie. So there's something, you can either choose to be excited by that or you can choose to be like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
And so I think this is really going to come together. We only get like a very, very brief glimpse of Aladdin and we don't see Will Smith's genie at all. So I think I'm not even going to understand what this movie is until we get that.
It pretty much hinges on genie.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just... on the one hand, I sit here and I'm like, well, I don't have any enthusiasm for this. And then I'm like, well, I'm not even the audience for this. So who cares what I think about it?
I agree with that. Although I feel like I could be the audience for this.
Sure.
And so I'm not going to, if it turns out I'm not going to turn on it because I'm glad that kids are going to hopefully like it.
And certainly, Brian, you and I both really liked the Jungle Book movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, their track record has been great so far. I think just for some reason, this trailer in particular.
Yeah.
Just rubbed me a little weird. No pun intended with the link. But I thought what was kind of interesting was one of the original writers of the animated Aladdin. See, who was it? It was Terry Rossio. And Ted Elliott, who they went on to go. They do the Pirates of the Caribbean films movies
and the Zorro movies, etc.
Yeah. Terry Rossio put out a tweet where he said, "So strange that literally the only words in the new Aladdin trailer happened to be a rhyme that my writing partner and I wrote, and Disney offers zero compensation to us or to any screenwriters on any of those live-action remakes, not even a t-shirt or pass to the park."
Yeah, that's some bullshit right there.
I was like, yeah, that is a little weird. I mean, especially, we don't know where this is going. Obviously, it's going to be a different take because Will Smith is not going to be doing Robin Williams. But at the same time, it feels like, you know, A Star is Born, for example, in the credits, it says, you know, based on a screenplay written by blah, blah, blah. So it almost feels like even if in the trailer, they're, you know, literally aping lines from the animated version, it does seem kind of crappy that they're not being included at all.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so, I mean, that seems like something Disney really needs to fix.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, so that comes out May of next year. So we got, Avengers 4 at the early part of May, or late April, and then we got Aladdin in the late part of May. So unless Aladdin pulls a Solo, Disney can expect to clean up coming and going in May.
Nah.
Isn't it sad that that's a metaphor now? Boy, yeah. If it's not another Solo, yeah.
It's like I just pulled a Homer.
Right.
Yeah.
But speaking of box office fortunes, unexpected, we have Venom, which is doing better than, certainly better than I expected.
Yeah.
So this movie has a $100 million budget, which is a relative bargain for a movie like this. Now, that being said, the relative bargain nature, I think, shows throughout the movie because it sure doesn't look like they spent a lot on it. Mm. But it's already made $150 million domestically and another $236 million internationally. So it's knocking on $400 million worldwide, and I think it'll get to $500 million before all is said and done.
Wow.
So this thing is a behemoth. I mean, biggest opening weekend in October ever. Something like $80
million. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, hey. I don't know.
That's a thing that happened, Brian.
That is a thing that happened. I mean, well, it's interesting too because I mean, what is out there right now is even comparable to it. I mean, and thinking about the movies, it's like First Man, A Star Is Born. These are like sort of like adult dramas.
Yeah.
So in a way, I guess I kind of get it. It's filling a void.
Yeah. Well, it's
not to undercut it, but
no. But I mean, well, it's funny because yesterday my wife basically called an audible and just disappeared into the night, which happens when you've got five children who are horrible little devil people, you know. And she's like, I'm going to see a movie, and she was going to go see Night School, you know, the Kevin Hart, Tiffany Haddish movie. And she comes back, and I'm like, hey, how was Night School? She's like, oh, it was sold out, so we went to see Venom. And I'm like, when? Like, go to The Star Is Born or something, you know?
Yeah, huh.
And so she's like, yeah, so I watched Venom. And she's like, you took our 9-year-old to that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did that. That's a thing that, yeah.
I didn't think you were going to see it.
Yeah, that's literally the thought I had in my head. Well, in my version of how this went down, you would never see the movie, so, you know. I still stand by. I took him. I think it's totally fine for because it's like that's the kind of thing that 9-year-olds are totally into, you know, cannibalism and.
Yeah. I was gonna say. I mean, I don't know. I imagine every kid's different, but you, I'm sure you know your kids.
My kid in particular, yeah, he resonates with Venom a little too much. I will say this, by the way. Philip Barker tweeted us, and he says, "Zachy and everything Brian's review of Venom is the reason I saw the movie. Still don't regret it." So I'd like to think we kicked a few coins into that $150 million domestic.
I mean, we laughed at it a little bit, but at the same time, we both didn't hate it either. No. We kind of had fun.
But I will go so far as to say, by the end of our conversation, my estimation of the film had increased ever so slightly.
Yeah, yeah, we had fun with it. Whether it was at it, I don't, you know, but we had fun with it.
Well, there is for sure going to be a Venom sequel. We can say that much. There is for sure going to also be this Morbius living vampire movie starring Jared Leto, which is also one of these tertiary Spider-Man characters. The question worth pondering is what happens to Spider-Man after the sequel to Far From Home, which my understanding is that the deal between Marvel and Sony was for five movies. So three like MCU movies, like three Marvel Studios movies and two Spider-Man Sony movies. So Civil War, Avengers 3, Avengers 4, and then Spider-Man Homecoming, Spider-Man Far From Home. There's the deal. So it ends next summer. So does Sony it up? Does Sony pull a Sony and Sony all over this?
Well, I mean, it would not be in their best interest because Marvel gave them, at long last, a hit Spider-Man movie. So sure. Why not? I mean, obviously you're a business and you have to try to be a little shrewd, but I mean, let's be honest, right? Like, let's keep this going.
That, again, that's a logical, rational approach, but Sony is Sony.
Right.
So my prediction is that there's going to be a nasty divorce between Sony and Marvel next year.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I still remember there was an interview. It was a junket interview. It was a joint interview with Amy Pascal and Kevin Feige talking up Spider-Man Homecoming. And, you know, Amy Pascal, who former head of Sony, but now she's just like a producer on Homecoming. So the person who was interviewing them asked about the Venom movie and these various other spin-offs, and she's like, "Oh, they're all going to be connected in a way." Like, she's very gingerly, like, stepping through this minefield, and you can see it on YouTube. The look that Kevin Feige shoots her is just like he's imagining just vaporizing her with laser eyes.
Really?
Yeah. It's very funny.
So it's not even like an Affleck to himself. Sorry, he like looks at her like
he's kind of looking at her like he's trying to beam his thoughts into her head, like, no, that's not going to happen, you know?
Wow.
It's very funny. So, I mean, clearly, Venom's success, this is my point, Venom's success makes it more likely to me that Sony cuts the cord vis-a-vis Spider-Man specifically. Like, if Venom flopped, then Marvel has a stronger hand. Whereas now, Sony can be like, well, hey, we got our Venom franchise, and you know, we can just introduce Spider-Man in there, and it'll be an even bigger success,
right?
You know, because here's the other thing. I just had this thought. Think about this: the Marvel Sony deal is for five movies. Tom Holland's deal is for six movies.
So you think they thought they were going to get him in a Venom movie?
Well, after the deal with Marvel is up, Tom Holland is still under contract. That means Sony could just make their own Spider-Man movie starring Tom Holland, and people won't think about it. People won't know the difference.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Right? I don't know. This is like a TBD. We need to come back to this. Put a pin in this conversation. See where we're at a year from now.
I mean, who would have thought this thing would have happened in the first place? So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where this all ends up.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
While we talk about iconic characters and what's going to happen to them next, this is news that literally just broke within the last hour. The CW is apparently developing a Superman TV series.
Because he is a character, right, on Supergirl?
He's a character in the CW verse of these various connected shows. He's played by Tyler Hoechlin. And he's appeared on that show periodically, and I'm assuming since the movie side has made clear that they have no desire to do anything with the Henry Cavill version of Superman, that the TV people are like, well, shit, all right, we'll just do our thing then.
Well, and those are pretty popular, right? Or at least they do well. Or
they seem to do well. I can't say I watch any of them, but I'm kind of amazed that I'm amazed by two things. I'm amazed at the sheer volume of them because there's Arrow. Green Arrow. Arrow is in its like seventh season, I think. There's Flash, which is in its fifth season. There's Supergirl, which is in its third or fourth season now. And then you got Legends of Tomorrow. So there's four shows right there. And then Black Lightning, there's a fifth one. And then they got this Batwoman thing that's, you know, lined up in the barrel. And then potentially Superman. So you'd be looking at like,
Wowzers.
You know,
could be its own network.
It's kind of amazing. I mean, Warner Brothers, the movie side, seems to not know what pot to piss in when it comes to the DC characters, but the TV people are sure making hay out of it, you know?
Kind of cool for the Supergirl people. Remember, that was like a CBS thing originally.
It was, yeah.
And then they're like, nah, this fits better over here. It's nice that they didn't have to dismantle it and I mean, they set up something over there. It seems to be working.
It's just plugging right along. And by the way, on the TV side, I mean, they got this. I'm not even going to poo-poo this idea, but it's called Pennyworth.
Oh, yeah.
And it's about the adventures of Alfred Pennyworth, a.k.a. Batman's butler, when he was like a badass special ops agent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to air on the Epix network. And they've cast Alfred, or young Alfred, in this. And what's his name? Jack Bannon, this young James Bond-looking guy.
That sounds like an action character's name. Jack Bannon.
Jack Bannon. Doesn't sound like a character that Gerard Butler would play.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So I have no idea whether this show will be any good or not. It seems like of all the avenues to go down in the DC universe, this seems like a more desperate one.
Yeah, sure.
Like, how many ways are they going to tangentially draw a connection to the Batman mythos, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Because Gotham, right? Good... Gotham has been doing that, where basically Jim Gordon has fought, like, every Batman villain already.
Mm.
So this will be that even more, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds ridiculous. But Oh, and by the way, the Titans TV show just launched on the DC Universe app.
You have Batman, that, right?
The series, as I call it.
Yes, right.
You know what? Only the pilot is available right now, and it is perfectly fine, I guess. It's just not aimed at me at all.
Right.
You know, it's one of these things. I looked at it, and I'm like, man, I'm just not the audience for this. I grew up reading the Teen Titans comic. Let me remember this. In 2003, they launched the Teen Titans cartoon. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very cartoony and very, I mean, it was very, very indebted to kind of Japanese anime, kind of on the humorous side. And I'm like, man, why can't this be more serious like the 80s comics, you know?
Yeah.
And then like 10 years later, they did Teen Titans Go, which is the next cartoon. And that is so cartoony that I'm like, man, why can't this be more serious like the previous cartoon?
Right.
And then now you've got Titans, and I watch this. I'm like, man, why can't this be silly like those cartoons?
Right. You need the degrees to really have a
yeah. So I will say it's cool to see Dick Grayson in live action as like an actual character. He's actually Robin. He's played by Brenton Thwaites, who is the co-lead in the last Pirates movie. He's what's his name's son. He's
Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom's son, yeah. He's
whatever his name. Will.
Will something.
Pirate, Turner.
Pirate Man. Yeah, there you go.
Pirate Man.
So did I like it? Not particularly, but I'm just like, you know, it's nice that it exists, I guess.
Yeah, it looks like a show that's like angry at its dad.
It is a little bit of that. It is.
You know?
It looks like a thing made for a streaming service, so it's got that kind of a budget, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, related to that, by the way, we're talking about Dick Grayson. I thought this was kind of amusing. This news broke yesterday. I didn't mean to go down this like DC Comics corridor, by the way, but DC has decided that they're changing Dick Grayson's name.
What?
Yeah, so he's not going to be Dick Grayson anymore. He's going to be Rick Grayson.
Explain. So like that'd be like changing Bruce Wayne's name, right? Like it's not like this is some new version of this. They're saying no, Bruce Wayne's ward is now known as Rick Grayson.
Yes.
Hmm.
So he says I went by Dick, but I'm Rick now, or something like that. I can only assume it's because that name is not, I mean, I don't know, do people go by that anymore?
That's a good question, because it's so funny. Like if you were to call someone a dick, I'd be like, uh-huh. And if you were to introduce me to someone named, like, Dick Gibbley or something, yeah, I'd be Dick like, Gibbley. Oh, nice to meet you, Dick. You like, sure. I don't know. Maybe it's my age and I've heard
to
that
to
name
me, the name Dick is like Gladys or Agnes. Like, it's just...
Yeah, I'm able to differentiate. But yeah. Maybe, again, it comes from possibly knowing people with that name. But I don't know. Who knows?
Well, that being said, I mean, since yesterday, I've just been throwing around puns. And I didn't know which one to go with, so I'm just going to read my list.
Okay.
I think this is a total dick move. They're bagging the dick. DC is totally dickless.
That's good.
Future generations won't know dick. And the last one, I just wrote penis. I couldn't think of anything else.
Dude, you should be getting paid for that. Unless I just wrote penis. I don't know. That's brilliant. Those are actually really good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, what are some other headlines we got here? Oh, man. Oh, actually, one more thing about the DC movies. The Flash standalone movie has been pushed yet again because it was apparently supposed to come out in 2020. It's now looking at 2021. It's supposed to star Ezra Miller, and Ezra Miller is also in the Fantastic Beasts movies. Mm. And so Warner Brothers made the only intelligent choice, which was, yes, of course we give more importance to Fantastic Beasts because that's a thing that is A, going to get made, and B, going to make money.
Right.
So, you know what? At this point, Flash, I'll be more surprised if the movie gets made than if it doesn't get made. You know?
That was my very first thought. I thought pushing it further away gave them more license to eventually cancel it.
I think that is pretty much what we're barreling towards right now.
Which is funny because it is ironic the sluggish journey the Flash has had to the big screen.
Touche, very true.
Yeah.
Not quite so swift, unfortunately. And it's a shame because I did like Ezra Miller's take on the character from what I saw, you know?
Yeah, I caught a good chunk of it again recently with some people. I don't know. It didn't play the same way for me the second time.
What, Justice League?
No, Justice League I still found fine.
Okay.
We had a friend over, too, who hadn't seen it. She had avoided it. And then we're like, nah, you know, it's not that bad. And then when it was over, she's like, oh, that was fun. But, yeah, particularly this time, it felt like Ezra Miller was like a 35-year-old playing an overeager, like, 18-year-old.
That's really funny.
I found it uncomfortable or just awkward.
Awkward, yeah.
Yeah, but well, I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was just my mood.
Well, by the time this gets made, he'll be a 45-year-old playing an 18-year-old, so.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean, I think he was cast in, like, 2015, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, wow. So, assuming this thing hits in 2021, the movie will come out 6 years after he was cast.
Hmm.
Which, again, I mean, let's be real. The odds of this thing getting made are well, you know what? It a lot hinges on Aquaman and Shazam.
Yeah, and then maybe they will tailor it. Like, seems like they're sort of course-correcting their universe, so yeah. This might not even fit into where they're going to be in a couple of years. So.
I think they're not so much course-correcting as not giving a crap about the universe anymore, which might be the only sensible way to move forward at this point.
Yeah.
Right, because when you think about it, I definitely didn't plan to go down this road, but but the problem with the universe model that DC has is that the pool has been peed in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? So you want to convince people to go swimming again.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, when you have a portion of it working exceptionally well.
Yeah.
However, there is pee involved.
Yes.
It's like a really difficult...
That's the problem.
There's no, you know, set course for this.
You need to wait for the pee to cycle out.
Yeah.
Let's see how far we can strain the urination metaphor. All right. Anyway, moving on. Just a brief update on something we talked about last time, and I'm only mentioning this because somehow we've gotten so much mileage out of this, but Lethal Weapon is not dead yet, Brian.
Uh-huh.
I know. So the series that, if you recall last time, where we last left the story was Damon Wayans being very vehement that after the 13 episodes of the show's third season, he was taken off for parts unknown. Well, he's decided to stick around for a little while longer because they've extended the order for 15 episodes.
From the previous 13. That's
so two more episodes, too. And then after that, it's kind of like a wait and see. Now it says here, this is according to Hollywood Reporter, sources say Wayans has in recent days also talked with producers about tweaks to the shooting schedule and having diabetic meals on set for him. And it says here, parenthetically, accommodating special diet needs for actors is a pretty common thing on sets, which makes me wonder, dude, why don't you just ask?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if he hadn't.
I mean, come on. If he asked, they would say yes. It's diabetes. It's not...
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you know, you have vegetarians. You have vegetarian options. And yeah, I mean, that should be a standard thing.
Yeah. So it says here, following that, the star is left open, at least to a degree, the possibility of returning should Fox decide to order a fourth season. Now, if you're Warner Brothers, you desperately want that fourth season because you're trying to get to syndication. And, you know...
Yeah. Well, it's funny because TV typically works where you order things... for one season twice. Like you order 13, and then if you you order a back nine, right?
Yeah.
So it's funny they talk about a fourth season because it's like they're not even really doing a full 22.
Yeah.
Season three. So it's kind of weird.
And again, it's the damnedest thing because the ratings have pretty much held steady. So people do like the
yeah.
the show, and they like the dynamic. And I'll say certainly for me, it is something I enjoy just sort of dipping in and out of. And Sean William Scott is just bags of fun. He's very enjoyable to watch.
Ah, I still haven't checked that out. I should.
Yeah, just give it a look. Mm-hmm. Speaking of police on television, this is news that literally just broke mere hours ago, and it made me very excited. ABC is looking at a sequel to NYPD Blue.
Well, why not, right? I mean, we've got all the other...
We got everything else coming.
Murphy Brown and...
What's brilliant about this is that unlike Murphy Brown or Roseanne, or now we have Roseanne minus Roseanne, you know, like...
Right.
Remember Garfield minus Garfield, those cartoons?
you're right.
That's kind of what this is.
Yeah.
But this the beauty of NYPD Blue is the star of the show is like the precinct. You know, I mean the original run of the show was 11 seasons or something.
Wow.
I think it was 11 seasons because it ended in 04, started in 93. Oh my gosh. I mean, people cycled in and out of there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The
mm-hmm.
only person who was there from beginning to end was Dennis Franz.
Oh, okay. Chicago's is he coming back for this? Franz.
He is not. They have killed off Andy Sipowicz.
Oh.
And it's about his son, Andy Sipowicz's son Theo, as he tries to earn his detective shield and work in the 15th squad while investigating his father's murder.
Oh, that sounds kind of good. I mean, I didn't even watch the show, but...
Oh, man, I loved NYPD Blue. Can I just tell you?
No, I know. I'm excited for you. This is... Yeah.
Yeah, so to me, it's exciting. Now, Stephen Bochco, who created the show, also passed away just recently, you know?
Mm.
So this is being spearheaded by his wife, his widow. And I'm assuming the thought here is that it's obviously... It's a dormant IP that has a certain amount of cachet. And you know you don't need to bring in any of the old actors, really.
Right? I mean, they could appear, but they don't need to be part of the weekly cast.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, Jimmy Smits, his character got killed off. Sorry, spoiler from 20 years ago. His character got killed off.
And... Oh, apparently, you couldn't. I haven't watched the show. They're all dead. You can't bring them back.
Yeah, Rick Schroeder was he replaced Jimmy Smits, and then they killed him off.
Really?
They actually did kill him off. Yeah. David Caruso was the first star, and he left in a huff. And I don't know. I don't think they ever explained what happened to his character. But Andy Sipowicz was like the heart and soul of this thing. The original NYPD Blue, by the way, folks, it's on Hulu. The whole series. So worth it. Like if you've never seen it, and a lot of people haven't. This is a weird thing. I think you and I have talked about this. How you can have a show that just commands the zeitgeist, like NYPD Blue, and then it ends, and it's like it never existed.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know, ER is like that to some extent.
Yeah, I didn't even know how long that was on. I think we just talked about it, right? But it ended not as long ago as I thought.
No, it ended in like 07.
Yeah,
which is kind of nuts, right? NYPD Blue is one of the all-time great cop shows, in my opinion. You know, worth absolutely, if you've got Hulu, the whole series is there available for you. Check it out.
Yeah, cool.
And it ran for 260 episodes over 12 seasons.
Wow.
So it ended in 05, actually.
Huh.
So this new version, at this point, it's only a pilot commitment, but... Mm. Hey, you know, we're in the cycle where we're bringing back all these old shows. The one I want to see is Aaron Sorkin revisiting the West Wing universe. And where is that at, you know, the 20 years later, 15 years later, whatever it is.
Could happen.
I think Stranger Things have happened, so we shall see.
I've said this before, but I mean just this plethora of shows that literally existed when we were kids now coming back. I mean, it's like, I think we can, you know, confidently say things really were better when we were.
It's true. it is true.
Everybody says that, but no one brought back their shows.
That's
bring
right.
Back our shows.
That's damn right. Yeah. Well, Brian, to be fair, don't you remember in the mid to late 80s where you had this plethora of series revivals like the new Leave It to Beaver?
Oh, yeah.
The new Dragnet, the new Adam 12, the new Twilight Zone, hell, Star Trek The Next Generation, right?
That's a, yeah. Huh.
Right? They were bringing the 60s back. The new WKRP.
Well, I don't remember that.
Really? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did that. That lasted for like 4 or 5 years.
Did they do a new Munsters?
They did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then Brady Bunch had that Christmas movie.
Well, and the series with Florence Henderson singing the song Under Duress.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. We had like a whole run about that.
We did.
You and I, probably back in the 50s.
Yeah.
The episode 50s.
Yeah. People, I think around the time Florence Henderson passed away, we had some fun at, I was going to say her expense, but that sounds terrible. At the expense of that show.
We're all done in love, because I mean, that was, I love that show.
Yeah. Well, not the Bradys.
No, Brady Bunch. Yeah.
Yeah. But regardless, moving on, this is a piece of news about one of our favorite topics on this show, inadvertently, and this is MoviePass. And with that in mind, Brian, I think it's time to inaugurate our theme music for whenever we talk about MoviePass. And we should mention here that our listener, Charles Landy, was the one who suggested this theme music, and pretty much we were like, well, that is obviously going to be the theme music for this.
It was like quite possibly the funniest thing that had been presented to me in a very long time.
So tell me about this. What's going on now?
Oh, MoviePass. Well, I personally, I came in pretty enthused about MoviePass, and I knew it was a doomed company. Let me be fair to myself. I knew this thing was not going to last, but I felt like it was an opportunity I should jump on because I was going to be able to see a bunch of movies for less money than I would have normally paid before this thing inevitably imploded.
This is the equivalent of you, Brian, watching the iceberg hit the Titanic and taking a lifeboat over to the ship and climbing on.
Yeah, but they had really lovely meals that I knew I was going to be able to enjoy for a short period of time.
This is you being like, I want to hear that band up close.
Yes. I have since canceled my MoviePass subscription. However, I have paid through the end of this month. And it's funny because I was like, okay, well, I should at least use this once or twice to make up for whatever I'm paying for. And I had this experience where I was like, okay. And it was like 12:30 in the morning or something, you know, at the end of a day. And I was like, okay, what do we got? So I was looking at all these movies, and the theater by my house had, say, 5 movies and all these times. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. So the next day at like 11 in the morning when I had the opportunity to possibly go, all gone. I have no idea what that was about. It presented it as if that was going to be the day's choices. But when it was the actual livable moment of that day, gone.
Wow.
So I don't even know I'm going to be able to use it in this last month. But then, so that's Brian's personal MoviePass news, but also it looks like things for the company itself are not, well, they were never going well, but they seem to, be hit with all sorts of other misfortunes. It looks like, the New York Attorney General is investigating the parent company of MoviePass, and they're looking into whether or not, the company misled investors about its finances.
Imagine that.
It looks like there's just going to be lawsuits aplenty. So imagine the Titanic sinking, and now all these lawyers are coming and trying to sue the Titanic as it sinks. That's basically what's happening.
I mean, what's crazy is that MoviePass stock was, at its high point, about $40 a share.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're just giving you, like, a gum wrapper with gum in it.
Chewed gum. Yeah, chewed.
That's each share, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, I can laugh about it because I think the thing, my friend Gene and I talk about this because we both had it. We still can't be mad at it. Like, we still can't even, like, kick it while it's down because we're like, we're going to leave this whole thing still having saved money.
Sure.
But it was easy to sort of be like, what is this thing doing? You know, from a distance.
Yeah.
But I've since moved over to Cinemia.
Sure.
And they had a summer sale, which I think they might even still be doing as a fall sale. So who knows if this is like a bad sign of things to come. But I paid, I think, $10 a month for 3 movies. And I've since, the first thing I used it on was Bad Times at El Royale. And it went without a hitch. So,
well, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We may need to transfer
one theme music to another. So, yeah. Let's see what happens with that. Why don't we take a little break, and we'll come back and talk about some Star Wars news.
Cool.
And we're back, and I hear our Star Wars music, so I'm assuming that means it's time for Star Wars news.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't it kind of amazing that it just never stops?
I love that if nothing else, we always have content to fill out this block of our show.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, look, you know, Star Wars has had its ups and downs as of late, but I think it's safe to say that you and I are still ride or die.
Yeah,
with Star Wars. And so on that note, I mean, we've spoken about the show The Mandalorian, which is going to be a streaming show on Disney Play at some point. I don't think there's a release date yet, but helmed by Jon Favreau. And it's kind of interesting, the response to this, by the way, because when I saw it, it's like space western, looks like Boba Fett isn't Boba Fett, made by Jon Favreau. I'm like, yeah!
Right.
And then as I go around and mention it to people, people are like, yeah, we'll see. Huh. I was like, oh. So I was expecting that, but it sounds like Disney isn't expecting that either, because it looks like they have filled out a lot of trademark applications to secure The Mandalorian for toys, games, video games, books, school supplies, temporary tattoos, clothing, footwear, the usual, the huge when it comes to Star Wars, right? Like the toothpaste, the Jar Jar Binks lollipops.
the one my brother designed.
I can't even, that's like the stuff of legend. And when I found out that your brother had a hand in that, that was amazing.
Yeah, he's the guilty party.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that he laughs about it too. Like, I mean, he, yeah. but yeah, but it seems like,
I should explain in case people are listening.
Of course.
About. I just realized. So there is a piece of Star Wars ephemera, which is widely considered one of the worst pieces of Star Wars merchandise ever made. And it is Jar Jar tongue candy. And the way this thing works is it's a plastic pump where you push the pump in, and the front end of the pump is connected to a candy tongue that emerges out of a plastic Jar Jar face that kind of opens up. So you push the pump in, and Jar Jar's mouth opens up, and you can suck on his tongue. Somebody in the product chain thought that this was a thing that children all across the fruited plain needed to have and to own make out with.
Yeah, I mean, that's effectively what you're doing.
Yeah. So this was a toy that my brother, who had, in the late 90s, he worked for a company called Odds On, and they were the people who put this thing out. And he was not the concept designer, but he was the engineer who figured out the mechanism to inflict this monstrosity on an unaware population.
Right.
Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I know. Well, so they're looking to see how we can suck on Boba Fett now. I don't know. Like, they basically, you know, I think they've said as much, or Bob Iger recently in some interviews said that they're going to slow their roll a little bit with the films. But then one could infer, as it looks like they're going to do a full court press with The Mandalorian, that they're still going to find a way to make sure that there's always something Star Wars related to buy. So, I mean, it goes without saying there's a lot riding on this show. Because I'm certain they're going to want to make a lot of Star Wars shows.
It's interesting because what we're in right now is the thing that you and I sort of predicted was going to happen, and that's where Star Wars goes from this mercurial thing that, you know, we get to experience every once in a while to this thing that's just omnipresent.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more available it is, the less necessary it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that Disney just have to figure out. I mean, it doesn't help that, unfortunately, Solo's performance has left them in a position of weakness, where now suddenly everything that comes for, you know, notwithstanding episode 9, everything that comes after that, they sort of have to justify why this thing exists.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, that's a tough slog. So I certainly hope it pays off for them.
Yeah, and, you know, it also, I feel like, is telling that they got Jon Favreau to do this, because it's like they're not playing around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's like a, A-list filmmaker, and I'm sure he's not cheap. And he also is the guy that kickstarted the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, you know, obviously they're looking like to go out incredibly strong out of the gate, and then hopefully, yeah, I'm sure milk a lot of mileage with TV.
Personally, I'm excited to see something that delves into that post Return of the Jedi, pre Force Awakens, you know, nether world that we're just kind of we really haven't gotten into at all in any fashion.
Yeah, and I, you know, I've heard some people say that it's funny because, I mean, Boba Fett's dead, but the guy looks like Boba Fett. So it's like they almost get to cheat, you know, they get to have Boba Fett without it being Boba Fett.
Which I think we said last time, that's like almost smarter.
I was like, I get it. And yeah, I don't care. Like, it looks cool. And I like the whole idea. They keep calling him a lone gunman, which is appealing to me.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like space Western. And I'm possibly slightly more optimistic about it than it seems some people are. But, you know, that's my failing.
Yeah.
How many Terminator movies have I seen in the theater? Come on.
That's true.
Yeah. But also, this is kind of interesting. In I think it was yesterday or a couple days ago, there was a lost or thought to be lost Empire Strikes Back making of documentary that was found.
Wow.
And apparently someone had it on actual film. And someone bought it, transferred it to DVD, and then someone purchased it and put it on YouTube. And it's directed by, I'm going to probably say this wrong, I'll spell it actually. It's Michelle Parbot, I believe. M-I-C-H-E-L-P-A-R-B-O-T. And I say that if you want to look it up. But I queued it up last night, and I have to say, it was pretty good, pretty interesting, especially if you're the type of person who enjoys seeing behind-the-scenes footage. But most especially if you want to see behind-the-scenes footage of a movie that, you know, sometimes I've said before, ceases to feel like a movie.
Sure.
It almost feels larger than life. So it's, mm-hmm, there's something fascinating about being able to see, literally you see Harrison Ford being directed as Han Solo on a Tauntaun. And that's just something to behold. I mean, if you start getting tingly hearing that, I definitely think it's something you're going to want to check out. And there's also a scene that I don't think was ever in any version where the snow creature, is that called a Wampa?
Yes.
Yeah, so that snow creature, there's a snow creature dragging Luke through the snow after he's been knocked out. And you can see just the absolute trouble they're having with the man in this suit, because he's walking on stilts in this blizzardy Norway snow, and he keeps falling over.
How funny.
And it's what's so cool about it is it looks almost like a splinter unit. Like, there isn't a ton of people out there. You got the director, you got the equipment and the cameramen and the whatnot. But the snow is just pounding on them, and they say that, you know, it's the snow's getting the lens, that's the biggest problem, and we keep having to stop.
Huh.
And so there's this weird, almost, it reminds you of you and your friends making a movie.
How
like
funny.
You almost forget that they're making a movie that's larger than life. You're watching a bunch of, or a smaller group of people having a miserable time in the snow trying to shoot something with a camera. And it just happens to be one of the most memorable movies of all time. And so it's just kind of an interesting thing to take in, and it's very loose. It's not, you know, like you would expect from a behind the scenes now, where it's very sharply edited and music and whatnot. It's very loose. It feels like scraps that they pasted together, but I think that also is what makes it compelling in its own way.
Very cool. So that's on YouTube.
Yes.
Very nice. Speaking of YouTube, there's this thing, this video that has been making around since yesterday. I believe you saw this. It's a deepfakes version of Solo, where this is fascinating and borderline terrifying,
yeah,
right? Where they took certain snippets from Solo, A Star Wars Story, and they basically digitally overlaid Harrison Ford circa, you know, 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, not in the sense like, oh, I want to see a whole movie like this, or oh, they should have done this, but just at what technology. This is like consumer software, essentially,
mm-hmm,
and it's what it allows you to do something like this. It's amazing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect, but it's so close to being great that you're like, oh, wow. Like, if you can do this on consumer software, I mean, just thinking about what we could do. And it's interesting too, also seeing Harrison Ford's face in that movie.
Yeah.
Right. I think that began as a thing where they were putting Nicolas Cage's face into all sorts of movies. Okay. I'm making it up, but it was Titanic and you know, just random movies, but they would throw Nicolas Cage's face on all the characters.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
Yeah.
And that was meant kind of jokingly, but this plays pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's kind of cool to see.
It's very cool. So that's like deep fakes, Han Solo, something like that.
Yeah.
You can check that out. This is also just, I found this amusing. This isn't particularly news, but on Twitter, Mark Hamill, as we know, Mark Hamill is a quite active presence on Twitter, and he engages with his fans a lot more than a lot of celebrities of his caliber tend to, which I always am appreciative of. But somebody asked him, he says, I wonder if Luke was actually going to leave the island to join the fight at the end, but then realized he still couldn't lift his X-Wing out of the water. At Hamill himself, what do you think? So this guy tweets to Mark Hamill, and Mark Hamill responds, the more important thing is, what do you think? I should probably keep my opinions on the Star Wars films to myself and let the audience make up their own mind. The movies speak for themselves. And doesn't this feel like this is you know, having taken his lumps from Mickey, yeah. You know?
Yeah. He's kind of learned his lesson.
He's learned his lesson. He's like, you know what? I'm just not going to say anything because this doesn't tend to go well, you know?
Yeah. And he is involved in the next one, right?
Yeah. That's official.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, everyone knew that was the case anyway.
Yeah.
It was an open secret even before it was revealed.
Yeah.
But it was nice to, I mean, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing him back. And I'll tell you, you know, it sucks that Solo didn't perform, obviously, and that we've spent enough time talking about that. But it is nice also to kind of have this lead up to the next one, to really prime the pump. And I have a feeling the next one will prove wrong the narrative that Star Wars is flailing and that Disney, you know, it's going to be a massive hit.
Oh yeah. I think so too.
You know, I was talking with Pervez, my co-host on Diffuse Congruence just this past weekend. And he's like, do you think Abrams is going to come in? And do you think, you know, what do you think he's going to do? And I was like, I'll tell you what I don't think he's going to do. I don't think he's going to come in and wave a magic wand and undo everything in The Last Jedi.
No.
You know, I think pretty much he's going to play the ball where it lays. I think we may get more insight into who Snoke was, possibly. But I don't think Snoke is going to be not dead.
Oh, yeah. No, I think, at this point, when you're making the last chapter of the movie, it's like to just keep undoing the movie that came before just makes no sense. So, I mean, yeah, it's in his best interest to just, like you say, play the ball where it lies.
And speaking of that metaphor, I mean, for all the grief Rian Johnson gets, I mean, he played the ball where Abrams left it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, oh, Luke would never do this. It's like, well, Luke was where Abrams put him, and Rian Johnson posited, you know, what would have put him there, and Abrams was okay with it.
Right.
You know, Rey, like, who their parents are, whatever. It's like, well, what happened to her was established in The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's always very funny to me, because people are like, oh, no, it's got to be, like, a Skywalker, or it's got to be Luke or somebody. It's like, we saw how she was left behind, and it was horrible.
Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? You hope it isn't tied to someone that we know.
Right. Exactly. She's screaming to the sky as Simon Pegg is like, shut up.
Yeah. Like, no, I think, I'm certain people were probably expecting more from the Knights of Ren.
Sure.
And Snoke to play a larger role. I actually have grown to appreciate the fact that Snoke just felt like a thing.
Yeah.
And like an obstacle. And but I am curious if JJ will go back. Like, no, trust me, the Knights of Ren were cool. Watch,
you know? Watch this. I think what I said before about Snoke being Emperor 2.0, and the movie realizing that and just being like, yeah, that's not interesting. That's boring. We've seen that already.
Yeah.
You know, I can appreciate that. But we've talked enough about
yeah.
I got opinions. Yeah. I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to doing, though, Brian, is I'm looking forward to doing our commentary for Revenge of the Sith.
Is that where we're at?
That's where we're at. I almost feel like we should knock that out, like, this year before the year closes, because...
Yeah, I was trying to think of anything we could tie it to, but, yeah. Well, we got a lot of good stuff. We got a lot of good stuff coming up.
We got a lot of fun commentaries. Sure. I'm very excited, but... Yeah. I think that is a good place to leave this conversation. And I want to say, actually, before anything else, very excited to announce that the Movie Film Podcast is now available on iHeartRadio and also on Spotify.
Very cool. Yeah.
And, that's thanks to everybody listening who, you know, our numbers are such that these venues are willing to take the show on. And that's super awesome, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, thinking back, every now and then we do this, but I mean, the first episode, which we do not recommend you looking up, was literally recorded. I was on my phone, I think, and I had headphones plugged in, and I don't even remember how we captured it, but it was just you and I literally making a phone call. And just to think of this happening now, you sent me the alert that this had started with Spotify, and I was like, wow, it's a good feeling.
Yeah. The technological handicap that we had to overcome, certainly for our first batch of episodes, was pretty steep. But I think we've come a long way. Back then, it almost felt like we were communicating. It's like in Lord of the Rings, remember, where like they light the fire here and then they see it over there and they light the fire. That's basically what we were doing, going back and forth. But it's been a journey, and it's a journey I'm very excited to see continuing and to see expand in so many ways. I also want to mention the Nostalgia Theater Show, which the episode that's live right now is my conversation with Dr. Arnold Blumberg, the Doctor of the Dead, and he has a new book out about the George Romero zombie movies, and we talk about Night of the Living Dead for that movie's 50th anniversary, and it was such a fun conversation. I really hope you guys will check it out. Even if you haven't seen those movies, I think you'll find what we had to cover and how we covered it worthwhile. And just earlier today, I talked to Dan Gilvezan, who is a voiceover artist who he was the voice of Spider-Man on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and he's also Bumblebee in the original Transformers show.
Oh, cool.
And, it was a very surreal experience as I'm sitting here listening to this voice that I know as well as I know, my parents.
Yeah.
I've heard it all my life, but he's responding to questions that I'm asking, you know? Very, very bizarre experience, and it's just one of the joys of doing that show. So that's going to drop soon, too, so I hope people will check that out. Brian, what do you have going on?
Well, season 2 of Puppy Dog Pals has just started, which is really exciting because that's the season. I was freelancing season 1, and I was there full-time season 2, and it just an awesome collaboration going on over there with everybody, and I was really, really proud to be a part of it. So that's going on Disney and Disney Junior, and I think it's a lot of fun, and people are going to enjoy it.
Very cool. And as for me, you can find me at my website, zackyscorner.com. You can go there and read my full review of Venom, as well as you can find all the other podcast appearances and things like that. You can also find me on Twitter at Zacky's Corner. That's my website, minus the .com. And please do follow me on there. I have some fun, and I talk about movies and politics and various other random thoughts that pop into my head. So I'd love to have you. And with that, I will remind you once again, please go to iTunes and leave a review. Leave a star rating. Every little bit helps. Anytime you leave a new review, I will make sure to read it on this show. And if you have any questions or comments, please hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast, or email us moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. And that's it for episode 158. But on behalf of my partner, Brian Hall, my name is Zacky Hassan. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Film Podcast.